Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yes, the Urban Sports Scene. And we are officially live on a Sunday. I know, right? This is Jesus Day. So we're live on Jesus Day. I'm Wally. And I'm here with my homie. Not Will T, my other homeboy. One of my best homeboys in life. My man, Ray Jeezy. What's good? What's good, Ray?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
How you feeling today, man? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We just finished playing tennis. I know you're a little tired.
I didn't want to say what's good or what's bad. I want to switch it up. I am tired, though. The sun is undefeated.
Yeah, the sun never loses, man. It never does. We were just playing tennis in this hot weather of the DMV. Very humid. And it was just this one side of the tennis court where the sun was just in your face. And it was draining on any... to me, it was more draining during the serve than anything.
It was a draining in general, but you can talk about me being tired, but you didn't take a picture. No. You didn't take a picture afterwards, which shows that.
Oh, I was tired. Don't get it twisted.
Usually you gotta take a picture.
Extra picture and post it and whatnot. No, there's no room for that in this situation. And you could tell I was tired and hurt. I just got some type of leg injury right now for no reason. So it was grueling.
I'm out of it.
It was grueling.
Like I said, the sun is undefeated. I've seen the water lose. People can surf, kill sharks in the water, fish, whatever. But you cannot beat the sun.
You cannot beat the sun. You can't beat. It was like 90. It was like 100 degrees. I know I'm probably exaggerating, though.
Well, my car said 106 inside.
Okay, then it was about 100 degrees. Ain't that something? Anyway, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. We are also part of the BDSIR Network. For other programming, just visit www.bdsirnetwork.com. Our phone lines are open. The phone number is 240-478-3140. Well, let's get into our tradition of pregame, the Nationals. The Nationals right now are struggling. They're second place in the NL East. They're behind the New York Mets. Why are the Nationals struggling at the moment?
Pitching is the main problem. That was supposed to be the strength of their team coming into the season. And this last stretch, I want to say, what is it, the past maybe 15 games, the pitching hasn't been there. Gio was the consistent, I guess, bright spot, and he struggled in his last outing. I'm surprised that Zimmerman has struggled the way he has, as well as Scherzer. It's been a bit disappointing.
You mean Jordan Zimmerman, right?
Yeah, Jordan Zimmerman.
Sorry.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, I just want to make sure.
You mentioned me earlier that Scherzer, he experiences points in the season where he doesn't play as well because of his pitching style, but it's something that I was unaware of, and again, it comes as a surprise to me.
No, if you look at him, you know, even with the Tigers, when he got to the level where he is today as an ace, just because of his mechanics, he'll go through lulls where he'll struggle during certain parts of the season, but he'll get it right back. He's a dominant pitcher. He's a strikeout guy. And also, it's a blessing that he is in the National League, so it's easy to iron out those kinks when you do have the pitcher as the ninth spot, so you have that break in a lineup. So I don't see him struggling for so long. But to me, again, I've always stated this before. Even though Scherzer's had a great season, he's been the ace of this team this season. I still believe that when everything's going good and everything's well, that Steven Strasburg is the best pitcher on this team, and of late he's been the ace. Coming off the DL, he's been the ace. He's been dominant. Though granted, he lost his last game. We only gave up two runs, and to be honest with you, that outing for him was a struggle. And for a guy who was struggling to only give up two runs in a pressurized situation where this Nats team is, I think it shows how good and how effective he's been since coming off the DL, and he's definitely reached the groove. So, this team, I feel like, you know, though it is tough to come back, I mean, I believe they're down like 4.5 or 4 games in the loss column to the Mets, this team will, in my opinion, get back in the race because of their pitching staff and because of their track record. I see Gio, even though he got hit hard yesterday, bouncing back. I see Strasburg continue what he's doing. I see Scherzer being dominant again. And Jordan Zimmerman's always, to me, has been a very consistent pitcher. Period, and he's pitching for a contract. So if he wants, a contract elsewhere, a hefty contract elsewhere. So if he wants to take his game to the next level, get that money during the off season, he's going to have a good September to show some of the potential suitors that he is that guy.
Well, local media has been questioning Nationals front office moves. Most recent, Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah.
People feel as though it messed up the Nats rotation.
I believe so. I think so too.
Storing up specifically. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually think that Papelbon being, I mean, though he is a front of line, top of the line closer, I think it messed up morale. Everything was going good. Drew Storen was a top closer. Why would you trade for Papelbon when you call, to me, there are other needs out there for this team offensively. They struggled offensively. Why not go after another bat to help out this team? Why go for a closer when you already had a closer? Now, I understand the idea of moving Storen to a reliever, but Storen has been a dominant closer. You could have brought in a guy, any kind of guy, to be a setup guy with a power arm. You probably could have found that guy within the organization in the minor leagues and transitioned that individual to be a setup guy. Now you see Drew Storen giving up runs. He wasn't giving up runs as a closer. I know people are going to say, well, he's a professional baseball player. He should just suck it up and do whatever it is. But he came into a groove. He was comfortable, you know. And all honesty, you're messing with his money too. And that affects his mind. So you had a guy who was pitching well. He was pitching well mentally and physically. And now you kind of took away the mental aspect of it. And now we're struggling a little bit.
It's very simple. They have to win the games they're supposed to win.
Mm-hmm.
They face a lot of top pitchers. I understand that. But you got a series with the Rockies upcoming after today's game with the Giants.
Yes.
You got the Brewers after that and the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
All winnable.
Yeah, they're winnable. They're all winnable.
You have to come out of that winning. I don't think it's it is possible for them to sweep each series.
Yes.
I don't foresee that happening. But you do have to sweep, I believe, at least one of those series, and you have to win the two remaining series. That's the most important thing. They have lost. I watched them lose to the Phillies. I watched them lose to the Braves. I've watched them lose to Miami. You can't do that if you're going to be a top team.
Again, you listen to Urban Sports Scene. But I agree with you. I totally agree with you. This team, but this team to me is capable of sweeping teams because of their pitching staff. If everybody's going well and pitching to their capability, this team can go on a streak. They have the pitching staff to go on a streak. It kills me, like, when the Nationals played the Dodgers, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody said, wow, they're playing Kershaw and Greinke. Like, that's their automatic losses. Now, granted, they've lost to them in two straight series to these two individuals. But when you look at the Nationals pitching staff, you should say the same thing. You're going against Matt Scherzer. You're going against Jordan Zimmermann. You're going against Gio Gonzalez. You're going against Steven Strasburg. That's not an easy rotation to go through. Even when they played the Mets, people were talking about the Mets pitching staff and not the Nationals. It's got to get back to a point where the Nationals pitchers, the pitchers for the Nationals, are looked upon the way that, you know, they need to be looked upon, because these are dominant arms. These are not average arms. They're dominant arms.
Overall, it just comes down to consistency.
Yes.
In the postseason, when pitching is meeting expectations, then you see the bats don't show up.
Yeah.
They lose a lot of close, low-scoring games. So consistency is going to be key. You have to win the games that you're supposed to win against teams that are not in the hunt. And if you really respect and are playing for your manager, then you know that his job is on the line. I really believe that. The front office can say what they want. I truly don't believe or trust anyone when they say that Matt Williams is safe. I don't believe it.
They said Matt Williams is safe? He shouldn't be safe, but he is safe because they extended the deal.
I want to say Rizzo mentioned that he has full confidence. Something he said. I mean, and I get it. You have to back your guy. Again, I think to this point, the team has not met expectations, even last season. And with David Johnson, they won more games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they lost same round, but just a more competitive squad. So you have this much talent. You're going to bring in someone else who can maximize the talent. And
you have a manager. Has improved. Do you have a manager in mind?
That's available.
Yeah, or guy you just don't have to be available. Guy that you would think that would be good for this team. He may not even be available, to be honest with you. Like, I think like somebody like Joe Maddon would have been awesome for this team.
Yeah, that's too late.
Yeah, I know.
Joe Maddon didn't come to mind though.
Okay.
Tony La Russa comes to mind.
Everybody likes to get. He's not managing. That's a good one. He's not managing.
Yeah, but I don't foresee him coming back.
Well, this team does have it is a really good. It's an attractive team to manage.
I'm not really, I guess, focusing on any one guy.
Okay.
I think,
is there a particular style of manager you would like this team to have?
No, not really. Because I, for me personally, as a quote unquote casual baseball fan, I honestly didn't like Davey Johnson's style.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
As an Oriole fan, like as an Oriole fan. Well, I'm an Oriole, like as an Oriole fan, because he managed. I liked. Well, his style run me the wrong way at times. I'll take that back. At times.
It's just, here's what I look for in any type of coach or manager. That you have to be confident in your decision-making. And how do you work under pressure? Matt Williams has seen a crack under pressure. Davey Johnson seems set in his ways.
Got you.
I think I need somebody who can make adjustments. To be honest with you, Buck Showalter, he knows how to make adjustments.
Yeah, he does.
He's good at that. And he doesn't crack under pressure.
No, he
That's
does
why
not.
I like him.
He does not. He does not at all. But speaking of the Orioles, speaking of Buck Showalter, I mean the Orioles, pretty much. The Orioles are a half game behind the second wild card team, which is the Angels, the Los Angeles Angels. Excuse me. Chris Davis is leading the team right at the moment, pretty much carrying it. Even though Adam Jones today hit two home runs, and the Orioles last time I checked were up 17-2 against the Oakland A's. If everything goes well, I think if everything goes well for the Orioles do make the postseason, I can see this team, if they make the postseason, I can see Chris Davis, being an MVP candidate. And it's funny because before the season, well, during the lull of the season when the Orioles were struggling, I believe he was hitting like low 200s. Home runs were okay, but he was hitting low 200s. I even said the Orioles should trade this man. But over the, and I'm not including it, but over the last, the post-All-Star break, Chris Davis is hitting, crazy. He's hitting his 15 home runs, 36 RBIs. Right now, he's second in home runs in the AL, and he has 88 RBIs, which is first in RBIs. So when I look at him now, I look at him as a guy who should be an MVP candidate, and we're talking about a guy who didn't make the All-Star team. Again, a guy that was playing right field because they wanted to audition Parmley at first base. So now, and now he's an everyday first baseman again, and the money's going to be right for him once he hits free agency. So, and that was a guy, again, I stated that, well, they shouldn't re-sign, or they should try to trade. Now is at a point where I think the Orioles should re-sign him, and it should re-sign him and give him a good size deal, because you can't keep let folks who hit about 40 home runs walk away from your team. They did the same thing with Nelson Cruz, and Nelson Cruz is having, to be honest with you, if the Seattle Mariners were a playoff contender, he would be the MVP of the AL. But right now Chris Davis is at a point where if he can stay consistent, and he can be in my opinion, he deserves to be an MVP candidate. In the month of August, he's hit about 9 home runs, 18 RBIs. I'm not including today. And he's hitting .354 in the month of August alone. After the All-Star break, his average is like 333. So if he can keep it up, be an MVP, that would be amazing, in my opinion, for a guy who didn't make the All-Star team. The team was even thinking about trading him. They weren't even thinking about re-signing him, looking for a replacement, moving to the right field, and all that being in the mix. If he can lead this team to the postseason, I think that's a good argument with him being the MVP.
If the argument would be there, I don't foresee it happening. I think
because Trout. You have to beat out Trout. Yeah, to beat out Trout.
The key word you mentioned, and I mentioned this earlier, was consistency.
That's true, yeah.
I have not seen that from either the Nationals or the Orioles this year.
Not at all. Not at all.
Which is a problem. But they're right in the hunt, and they're very close.
Yes.
Which is a bonus. I think that has given them momentum, as you can see. I do expect the Orioles to make the postseason and carry that momentum into the postseason. It's just, are their bats going to stay hot?
That's a big question. For me, about the Orioles is that everything's happening the right way. They need consistent. But they're going to need people like Adam Jones and Chris Davis to be consistent. We see, like, even amongst this winning streak they have, this minor three-game winning streak at the moment, because it's going to go to three games. They're up 17-2 unless something crazy happens. So if it's up to Adam Jones and Chris Davis. They got to lead this team. These are the individuals that lead. And Manny Machado. Manny Machado's having to me, has been the best Oriole in terms of Rays saying consistency. Yeah. Manny Machado has been the most consistent Oriole. He doesn't have to be on a hot streak. He's been streaking since day one. So when you look at Chris Davis and Adam Jones, especially Chris Davis, there's peaks and valleys. Adam Jones has been more of a consistent player compared to Chris Davis. Chris Davis has just gotten super hot at this moment. But yeah, those two, I'm not going to mention Manny Machado because he's been consistent, but I'm going to mention Adam Jones and Chris Davis. They have to be consistent for this team to do anything if they get to the postseason. But I don't think it's a guarantee for this team to get to the postseason. Because they're putting so much pressure on Adam Jones and Chris Davis to perform at a high level. The pitchers need to step up. I mean, Chris Tillman has to step up. He's pitched well, but he had one bad outing recently. They can't afford that. Chen has to be consistent. He's had a rough stretch, but he's back to normal. You have Miguel Gonzalez, who they need to really pitch well. He had a good outing yesterday, but he needs to be consistent. He's been giving up a lot of home runs and has given up multiple runs before yesterday's start. So they're going to need those guys to step up. Gausman's pitched well. They're going to need the other guys I mentioned to step up. And if they can do that, if those pitchers can step up, I think the Orioles will be fine. They can make the postseason as a wild card team. I really don't see them catching the Yankees. I thought they would at first, but the Yankees have played at such a high level. They've been, to use Ray's word, consistent. They have, though. They've been very consistent, and the Orioles haven't. So it's gonna definitely come down to September to see what this ball club can do. But anyway, down to pregame. Let's go to some basketball. Tristan Thompson's agent warns the Cleveland Cavs that if he's forced to sign a 1-year deal, he won't come back that following season. How's that play for LeBron? Because you know it's all about LeBron James.
Well, LeBron, you know he publicly advocated for the Cavs to get a deal done. LeBron is killing me with the whole general manager.
He really is. I agree. I agree.
Kobe did it behind the scenes, and that was annoying. But at least Kobe was winning rings, and I don't care if he has Shaq or not. LeBron, I know, I get it, and of course, I'm just a fan of the game. LeBron is who he is, one of the greatest players. But it seems as though, since he's come back to Cleveland, he was probably given a lot of pull.
I think so. I mean,
he's coaching the team. He's the general manager. I don't think Cleveland is losing sleep over potentially losing Tristan Thompson. The interesting dynamic is that Rich Paul is representing Tristan
Thompson. Yeah, exactly.
And that's LeBron's man. Of course, you would expect the deal to get done. However, if Tristan Thompson goes to another team, gets a max deal, so what? You lose Tristan Thompson, big deal. I do think that Kevin Love is receiving a lot of just that love from Cleveland because once they inked him, it seemed like Tristan Thompson was not a priority any longer. And he's long-term. Tristan Thompson my presumption is he won't get a long-term deal like he's desiring, and he's gonna leave. We'll see. A lot can change.
He has value, though. A lot of people want him. But
but I don't think he'll perform, depending on where he goes.
That's true.
At the level he did this season. And you're playing with LeBron James. LeBron James makes a lot of people look better.
That's good. That's true.
Anderson Varejao looks pretty good. When LeBron left Cleveland, you didn't hear much about him. Just being honest.
Yeah,
Anthony
real.
Parker, Mo Williams. You can name – Mo Williams was good before he played with LeBron.
Yeah, he was. But I'm saying.
It seems like he became a bit non-existent once he left Cleveland. Delonte West was no longer the same player after he played with LeBron James. You get my point. If I'm a Cavs fan, which I'm not – I'm a Wizards fan. I could care less either way. Tristan Thompson does not make a big difference to me.
Gotcha.
He's a great rebounder.
Oh, he's an awesome rebounder, to be honest with you.
But he's not Dennis Rodman.
He's
a great but he doesn't finish well at the basket at times.
He finished well last season in the postseason to me compared to what I saw before. He's a little floater, and his little floaters was pretty good.
Okay. How I'm going to frame it is I need to see more. Put it that way. Draymond Green had a decent postseason, but that's not meaning I want Washington to sign him.
Yeah,
heck no.
Because that Draymond Green would be nothing else, though.
That's what I'm saying. You played I totally agree. Yeah. He's a system guy. Mm-hmm. He does not have value outside of the team that he's playing with. That's how I look at Tristan Thompson. I'm not rushing to sign Tristan Thompson. I want DeMarcus Cousins. That's a whole other subject in Washington. But big deal. Tristan Thompson, your agent – that's a great job. Great pull. Go to the media. Mm. You go to Brian Windhorst out of all people, who is
LeBron's man.
I mean, owes his entire life to LeBron.
I know, right?
Hey, he's looking out for one of LeBron's boys now. But LeBron coming out and saying, you need to get the deal done. I am going to guess LeBron, all he has is a high school education. You have no idea how the numbers work.
Yeah.
You just talking. You're answering questions, though. I get it. But I think the Cavs will be fine no matter if they have Tristan Thompson or not. They'll have him next season.
Yeah.
The Cavs are expected to win the NBA championship. I think in Vegas, the odds are in their favor. And I personally expect for that to happen, depending on what happens with San Antonio. If they stay healthy,
that's real.
And then OKC, I want to see what they
– I think OKC is the favorites.
I said a few shows ago, the last time I was on.
Yeah.
We'll see. We will see. And like I said, I don't. Enes Kanter doesn't play defense.
That's my man right now.
But I would take him over Tristan Thompson, and he's with OKC.
Oh yeah, I would. I'll take Enes Kanter over Tristan Thompson too. And you know, you put me on Enes Kanter. You know what I'm saying?
I tried.
I know. you mentioned Kobe Bryant earlier. Kobe Bryant stated that this could be his last season. If Kobe leaves after this season, what state do you feel that you put the Lakers in? You know what I mean? What would be like the thing folks would say in terms of what did Kobe, how did Kobe leave LA?
Him. I blame Mitch Kupchak for giving him the deal that he gave him.
Yeah.
For past work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's stupid. I don't know. I mean, usually there's no loyalty in professional sports.
Mm-hmm. There was no loyalty to Shaq. They got rid of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
How many people have you seen? Did you see Scottie Pippen finish his career as a Bull?
No.
No. He ended up going to two other teams. Joe Montana, he didn't finish his career as a 49er.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Bird, I know he finished with the Celtics, but clearly he was a shell of himself. They didn't just give him a long-term deal. Like, and also, I guess maybe you're coming from a personality standpoint with Kobe where who was it? Jared Elliott said nobody wants to play with Kobe.
Yeah.
That could be true. It could be true. The NBA does not seem to be a tight-knit fraternity like the NFL is. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at all the players. If I'm watching the Patriots win constantly, I'm getting sick of them. I understand there's Deflategate, people snitched or whatever. I don't know who. There was Eric Mangini snitching before. So I get it. There are people. But that seems like it's more on the coaching front and in the front office. But players, I mean, you saw the recent poll, right?
About
Tom Brady. They said that they don't believe the Patriots are cheaters.
Oh, yeah.
The penalties were too stiff.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that poll, though. But I'm talking about, I don't read that poll. I don't believe that poll at all.
Why not?
Because I don't believe – it's not at all. That poll means – they're trying to make them look a certain way. I can't believe that poll. I just can't. I'm not a believer.
The media is not on Tom Brady's side, though. So I think the poll holds some weight. I don't like anything that's anonymous. And I'm not an overall poll person. You know, Donald Trump is being – deemed the Republican nominee through polls.
Exactly.
Where they're not polling me or you.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not a big fan of polls, but I still think that's unique.
Yeah.
And if you ask players publicly, I think their drive is to beat the Patriots. They don't care whether they were killing the Colts anyway.
Uh-huh.
I don't think whether the footballs were lighter mattered anyway. But going back to your question, Kobe is not liked. And he's not, and he didn't want to be.
Uh-huh.
He said it time and time again. Apparently, he's grown as a person, you know, and that is because he got caught in Eagle County.
Yeah.
it is. That's what changed him.
Yeah.
It really changed him as a person, and he stepped back and he wanted to treat people differently, starting at home and on his team. But Kobe obviously is someone who is extremely arrogant to the level where it's a turnoff, and I think that. It's a two-way street, man. Mitch Kupchak, the Lakers front office, they messed up. They messed up big time and signing him to that big deal. You know, Magic, to me, they weren't even as loyal to Magic.
They were loyal to Magic.
Not to where they put the team financially in a bind.
Well, because he was still playing at a high – his situation's a little different. He was still playing at a high level. He took him to the world. He carried that team to the finals. His last true season, he carried that team to the finals.
Against the Bulls?
Yeah, he carried that team.
I'm talking when he came back heavy and he's playing.
You're talking about that. Yeah.
No, he wouldn't carry nobody.
I thought you meant the real Magic. I thought you meant like.
Well, Magic, even that team that played the Bulls in the finals, they had no chance.
Yeah, but they weren't talented. He's the one who carried that team. I'm saying, like, he carried that team to the finals.
Yeah, I don't think it's comparable to Iverson. And like I said, they didn't award him with a big deal.
No, I'm just saying, you're saying that the Lakers were loyal. Like, it's not fair. Like, Magic wasn't in a downfall of his career when he left.
Yes,
he just left.
He was on the decline.
But he was still playing at a high level. He was getting his team, look at the Lakers now. The Lakers weren't giving, the Lakers aren't going to the playoffs with Kobe Bryant. They weren't. They're not. Right? When Magic took a team with young Vlade Divac and without and aging Worthy and folks to the finals. And
who was their competition? Portland?
Portland was good. The same teams that made it out after him. Think about it. Portland.
I just feel like the West wasn't strong.
Oh, the West was strong. That was a strong. We're gonna have this. We don't need to have this. This is a whole different topic of debate. The West was stronger.
No team that you just named.
The Rockets. Wanted,
the Rockets. Yeah, but the Rockets weren't going past the second round back then. You had a strong Phoenix team. I'm not gonna say Utah. Utah became strong after Magic retired.
Okay, Utah was strong.
Utah was not strong.
Utah was the same. There's the same system. Pick and roll.
Earl Bailey.
John Stockton, Carmelo. That's emerging. Pretty. And you had Jeff. Jeff Hornacek was in Phoenix. Not was it Phoenix?
Yeah, he was.
Phoenix. He was a Phoenix
right.
By then. He was Phoenix by then. Oh, even the second 76ers. He was in the 76ers too. He was on that team too. Again, it's a little different.
I have to look back.
You gotta look back. I gotta play NBA Showdown again.
There are degrees of loyalty.
Yeah, we agree with that.
That's what I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
If you're too loyal, a prime example of being too loyal is the Bullets to Wes Unseld.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have stayed on as long as he did in any capacity. I mean, he was a terrible coach and a GM. I just feel like they were too loyal
to
Kobe.
Is there a current player too? Is there a current wizard they were extra loyal to?
Well, Gilbert.
Were they extra loyal to Gilbert? Were they?
I think so.
I think so too. When you knew he was pretty much done, they were just trying to keep.
Well, I think they gave him the opportunity. He led them. When you don't have a rich history like the Lakers, when you have a man that carries you to meaningful playoff series,
that's true. That's
why they had second round T-shirts.
Yeah.
I think he deserves a chance.
Got you.
But look at what the Morris twins are going through. There's no loyalty in sports.
I know.
But yet,
how are they coping with that?
He said he's not playing for Phoenix.
Are you serious? He said that?
He said he's done. He said he'll report he's a professional, but he said he expects to be traded before the season starts.
Oh, wow.
He said because it's the way they did it. They intentionally asked them or they agreed to, however you want to frame it, to take less money to play together.
Yeah.
And then Phoenix trades him. And they just felt like that was a slap in the face. And they didn't even tell him. He found out, I don't know, via...
Because I thought they were cool not playing with each other anymore.
He didn't have to play. He said it's the way they went about it.
Okay.
You know, there wasn't a phone call saying, hey, we're going to move you for X, Y. He just found out at the last minute, hey, you've been traded. And this was after they took pay cuts. They could have took bigger deals elsewhere. And now he's like, I'm going to get paid. Because when he gets traded, he probably won't play with his brother. It's not about his brother.
Mm.
It's just about, them feeling that they can trust Phoenix. And the trust has been broken. Like I said, there's no loyalty, of course. And when there is, there has to be a great reason. Look at Michael Jordan, for example. All that he did, and he still ended up with the Wizards later on because he wanted to stick it to the Bulls because he was upset.
Yeah, that's right, because he blew up the team. He wanted to serve. Yeah, that was no loyalty to Jordan and his situation.
There's no loyalty in sports. I don't know why I miscalculated. I believe that it was a impulsive decision, and, Dr. Buss not being there to oversee that was a problem. And Magic agrees that they should not have made that deal with Kobe.
He said that now. He wasn't saying that before. Anyway, speaking of Michael Jordan, you mentioned Michael Jordan. You're doing a good work.
Segways.
Yeah, you are. And not on purpose. I know. That is awesome. Speaking of Jordan during a Q&A at the Michael Jordan Flight School camp in Santa Barbara, California, he said a lot of things. One was that he felt that he could beat LeBron James 1-on-1 in his prime. And another... He told a couple kids that the kids in the attendance that he can well like this. They asked him a question about Dean Smith and Phil Jackson, and this is what Michael Jordan had to say. But I'm gonna start off with that discussion. Kobe Bryant, but it actually does start off with LeBron James, but it actually does start off with the Dean Smith and Phil Jackson thing. Why are you laughing at me, man?
Go ahead, sir. You're doing a great job.
Anyway, here comes the Q&A right now as we speak. Y'all make sure y'all pay attention. Bye.
If I had to play one game, who would I want to coach? Phil Jackson or Dean Smith? Ooh. Dean Smith.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, Dean Smith helped me become the basketball player I am today. Phil was lucky because I was taught the game by Dean Smith. Good question. How did I feel when the Detroit Pistons walked off after we beat them in 1991? I felt fine. I felt accomplished. We beat them, and they really felt ashamed about us beating them. I felt like it was bad sportsmanship. I would not advise you guys to do that. You got to be able to lose in grace and win in grace the same way. So don't walk off the court, even though you're losing. That's just bad sportsmanship. And I feel like that was a bad example of his voice. Who's the biggest trash talker I ever played against? Harvey Lattenberg. Yeah, he talks a lot of trash. Good trash, not dirty trash. Good trash. Knew that was coming. What did I think about when Shaq said that the all-time five of the greatest of all Lakers could be the Bulls and five greatest players?
Never.
I just felt like he was just talking. I think it's a debate. The thing is, we would never know. I think we would have killed him. You think we would have killed us? You got to decide. It's just a debate. Favorite player to play pickup games with? My best pickup game I've ever played was the games and the fractions with the Green Team. That to me was the best. And my team was myself, Scottie Pippen, Patrick Ewing, Larry Bird, Chris Mark. We played against Magic Johnson, Clyde Drexler, John Barkley, David Robinson. That's not right. And we killed him. Space Jam did Bugs Bunny steal the spotlight? Yes, it did. Much more famous than me. And he's still more famous than me. Yes, that's a tough question. If I had a chance to go one-on-one with Stephon Curry or LeBron, which one would I choose? Go one-on-one. Right now or when I was in my prime? Right now? I'll go against Stephon Curry because I'm a little bit bigger than him, so I can kind of back him in. But LeBron's a little bit too big. That's okay, I can foul. I can't foul out. Great question. If I had a chance to add another member to Team Jordan, what would I do? What would I hire? Does it have to be a certain sport? It could be any sport. I am a big fan of Trout baseball. I absolutely love him. I wish I could hire him, but he's a nice man, so I can't steal like this guy. Why are you guys getting that question? I know this is the ESPN question. I know it's going to be all the ESPN. If I was in my prime, could I beat LeBron in a one-on-one game? No. No question.
All right, you're back. All right. So anyway, I want to talk about the Dean Smith thing. He said a lot, obviously. Talk about he'd be the best pickup game he had. He'd be Magic Johnson squad. I used to kill him. I don't believe that. But that's okay. I'm not getting to that. That's more of a personal thing. Dean Smith. Who do you think is more valuable? Who would be more influential when it comes to coaching between Dean Smith and Phil Jackson? Phil Jackson's a guy who's up there all time in terms of winning championships in the NBA, and you got Dean Smith, who's won a lot in Carolina and one of the all-time winning coaches, period, in college basketball.
Well, I mean, clearly, when you compare the two, Dean Smith, who coached Michael Jordan early in his career, taught him and ultimately led Jordan's team to a national championship. Of course, he's the favorite. To me, in my opinion, it would seem as though, I would take him over Phil because, again, he helped that development. Phil got the player, as Michael said, that taught him the game. But the primary factor for me that bodes in Phil's favor is that MJ wasn't winning any championships with Doug Collins. He was unable to win until Phil became the coach and implemented that triangle offense. So, with that being said, if you weigh the two arguments that I just presented, it's still still votes in Dean Smith's favor. You can't say that in every case. You know, for example, other great players, you may not want to credit their college coach or their high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that Dwayne Wade will take his coach Tom Crean over
Pat Riley.
Yeah, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. He may take him over Eric Spoelstra, though.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say Eric. I think Michael Jordan had a valid point, and it was, he didn't hesitate. That's what struck me.
Well, I think Jordan is correct because, one, it's his opinion. He played with both guys, so we have to actually take that into consideration. This you know, Jordan led Phil Jackson team to 6 championships, two three-peats. So you have to take that into consideration. But also how I look at engage the situation is that Dean Smith, his tree of coaches, you know what I mean? You got Roy Williams, people don't like, has won a couple of national championships within Carolina. It was 2 in Carolina, right? Won a couple in Carolina. And he's had a college coaching career. You have Larry Brown, who coached under Dean Smith and did well in Kansas, won an NBA championship with the Detroit Pistons.
He won a college championship,
and won an NBA championship with the Pistons and took another team to the finals with the 76ers. He didn't take the Pacers to the finals, did he? No, right? He was gone by that.
Larry Bird was their coach, I think, the year they lost 11.
Okay, so he is. So he's a very good NBA coach and a good college coach, and even with SMU, and see what he's done in SMU, which is funny. They're about to have another allegation. You heard about SMU?
No.
Yeah, they have another one coming up down the pike in terms of wasn't able to control boosters and whatnot. But so if you look at, even like I mentioned, like, so he's had a good tree. I know I'm forgetting other coaches as well. And you're a Carolina fan. You may know a couple more than I do. I'm just saying you may know a couple more than I do. But those are the ones that stand out to me. So if you look at Phil Jackson's tree, most of those individuals on his staff haven't really done well as head coaches. Brian Shaw, yeah, not
that's
doing
not
too well.
Fair, Brian Shaw being under his tree.
But there's a couple out there. Kurt Rambis was under this tree, even in L.A. You know, I mean, just if you really look at it, I'm just saying they haven't really won. You know, I'm trying to think of one. I just can't. Steve Kerr played for him. He wasn't under his tree.
Yeah. Is that the determining factor in your book, the whole coaching tree thing?
It shows your greatness of coaching. I feel like, you know, people rub off on people, and it shows an element of your influence as a coach. I mean, just your influence alone. Like Mike Holmgren was a good, really good coach. His influence speaks volumes. Even Bill Walsh, same thing. His tree speaks volumes. So I hold that to a high regard. Not the highest, but to a high regard.
Well, Belichick is a great coach. His tree has sucked when they become head coaches.
That's true.
A tree is tree.
A tree. A tree is a tree.
I don't think that's actually a good point. I don't think it's really relevant, man.
Well, Mangini had a good run with it. Mangini was doing okay with the Jets for a couple of seasons. So yes, his tree is okay.
Charlie Weiss couldn't succeed.
Charlie Weiss was okay
in the NFL or college.
In college, he did well his first year.
What, Notre Dame?
His first year he did well.
Romeo started out 6-0 at the Broncos.
Yeah, Romeo Cornell did all right with the Browns.
Get out of here.
For the Browns, no, right. The Browns that was went to the playoffs.
Didn't he go to the Chiefs after that?
Yeah, that's in a whole different situation.
No.
He was going to the Browns after that.
I thought he went to the Chiefs.
He started off with the Patriots and went to the Browns.
He
went to the Browns.
After he got fired, he went to the Chiefs and he got fired again.
That's a possibility. I have to look that up.
He did good
with the Browns.
Trees? I mean,
it shows your influence. It does. Who's your favorite? Like, all right, let's look at who's your favorite football team? Atlanta. All right. So
no coaching tree.
Yeah, because that's different. That's a bad situation. All right, because your coaches have been a little, just as bad as the Redskins coaches.
Now, does Holmgren get credit for Jim Zorn?
Does he?
Yeah, that's what matters.
Unfortunately, he does.
That's what I'm
look, there's bad apples everywhere. So in your tree, when you have a tree, there's a tree, right? You have a tree, right? Let's say you have an apple tree. There's one rotten apple. You got some good fresh apples, you know what I mean? But there's always like one rotten apple in an apple tree. So in his tree, Jim Sorensen's rotten apple.
Man, come on, man.
Look, I'm just saying. It's a rotten apple.
I don't get the big deal about a tree.
All right, man, we don't have time to be talking about trees, man.
Because
we don't have time to keep talking about
trees. You're the one that brought it up. But I'm just trying to say, for me, it's not as relevant.
Okay, thank you. It's relevant. I'm just saying it's relevant for me.
Look at Coach K's tree. His most successful coaches have been Tommy Amaker.
Very good.
And Quinn Snyder.
Yeah, he's okay. Had some good folks under his tree. But see, Coach K comes from Bobby Knight. Bobby Knight has a tree.
Who else is under Bobby Knight's tree?
I don't know.
That's not a tree. What classifies a tree? You got to have more than one branch.
That's true.
I'm sure Bobby Knight has a couple others.
I'm sure he has. Like, wasn't Mike Davis under Bobby Knight's? I don't know if he was or not. He coached Indiana right after Bobby Knight, so I don't know if he was under the tree or not.
I thought Mike Davis coached
somewhere else.
Tubby Smith. I thought. Maybe I'm wrong.
You could be right. I have no idea. See, I didn't stamp that one.
Best coaches do not have trees.
Why do we keep talking about trees?
Because you brought it up.
And it was a good argument.
You tried to go to Mike Holmgren like a real easy.
That was a good one.
That's an obvious one.
That's a good one though. That's a good one.
If you want to make a tree argument,
that's a good one.
You got Tony Dungy who has.
I was going to mention Tony Dungy, but you just tried to crap on my Mike Holmgren.
His tree.
His tree's awesome.
And it's a black tree.
Tommy Frazier. It's a black tree.
Tommy Frazier.
That's a Tommy Frazier. Oh, what's his name? No, Frazier. Oh, Leslie Frazier. He wasn't a good coach though. He's a bad apple though. He had a good season. No, I take it back. Leslie Frazier had a decent season. Yeah, he had one decent season.
John Calipari, where's his tree?
Does he have a tree?
That's what I'm saying.
He's one a selfish dude. Coach. Oh, he has Ross Strickland now, but he's not going anywhere. Though. He keeps all his good coaches, so he won't have a tree. He just keeps his coaches. He won't have a tree. He just keeps them bad boys.
Jim Boeheim, where's his tree?
You see all his peoples are old. He keeps his folks. You see his assistants? They're like 80 years old. They ain't going nowhere.
Gino Auriemma, does he have a tree?
Gino Auriemma. I don't know about female games. I can't really do that. I don't. I'm not that educated enough. If you're a female listener, please call in.
Hashtag tree.
Shoot.
Tree.
Coach K got, what's the name too? Hurley. Well, was Hurley coaching? Was ever coaching under him though? I don't think so. Was he? I don't think so. Anyway, I don't want to keep talking about trees anymore. I'm done with talking about trees. All right. In boxing, Canelo Alvarez, Cotto, has been announced for November 21st in Las Vegas. Don't worry, we're just going through this real quick.
Well, no, it's okay. I like Canelo Alvarez. I wonder what Miguel Cotto is going to show up. I'm interested to see. He usually trains very well. I actually think Cotto can win.
I agree. I think Cotto can win this fight too. I think this is a dangerous fight for Canelo, but it's an intriguing fight. It's going to be a really good fight. I could see Canelo, Cotto imploring, goes to body game, but, being trained by Freddie Roach has been a blessing for Cotto because he's now showing more of his, he's now showing a better boxing plan. This is a very scary fight for Canelo, in my opinion, because Cotto is now more versatile as a boxer because of Freddie Roach. But again, Canelo is a machine, so he can knock Cotto out. It's a possibility. But I would not be surprised if Cotto wins this fight. And actually, I'm leaning towards Cotto unless Canelo does something different, even within training or whatever. If I see something like, oh, that boy look mean or something. But I'm leaning with Cotto as well. All right. So anyway, it's time for a commercial break. When we get back from break, we'll be talking about the Washington Redskins' first preseason game against the Cleveland Browns and much more. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Dosis.
Tree.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
This is that ice cold Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Stylin', violin, living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too hot. Call the police and the fireman, I'm too hot. Make a dragon wanna retire, man, I'm too hot.
Yeah, this is my song. Bruno Mars and them. Nice song. Anyway, you can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbeam is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can also listen to us on the Sports Career Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Still a Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Still a Fan. Again, our phone lines are open. The phone number is 240-478-3140. That's 240-478-3140. Again, you are listening to the Urban Sports Scene, and we are part of the BDSIR network. All right, Redskins, they beat the Browns. I forgot, you know the score of the game? You remember the score of the game?
20-17.
Yeah, 20-17.
I don't know, I think.
Yeah, you're right. You're right enough. Damn, my outline's off. Like, it's old stuff. No, that's not my outline, actually. I'm looking the wrong way. All right, yeah, we beat 20-17. Trying to look what I had with my question I posed for it. You can tell I'm scripted. I'm scripted. Did you see the game?
No, I was out of town, remember?
Yes, you were out of town. Sorry. You can't watch it? You can't watch the game at all? It's a Redskins game.
He's going to come at me, you know, so you can stall a little bit.
I found it, so I'm done with you.
I clarified earlier that
I'm done with you. I found it.
Little League Baseball dominated the headlines in Delaware.
Little League Baseball. I found it, so now I have to talk. Now I can talk
it
reasonably.
It was most of the hotel stations. Of course, they have access to NBC4 Washington, but yeah, the hotel did not have it. They only carried CBS and I believe Fox.
Thank you for carrying the show right there while I found where I need to be at, man.
I'm going
to
be part of the Urban Sports Scene tree. You, know, you then will be
the
part
tree.
Of the
fish,
tree.
Fish. You know what I'm saying? The tree is awesome. The tree is like that. You know what I mean? You gotta appreciate the tree. You know what I mean? The tree does everybody justice. But like, think about it. You know, Apple G's, you know what I'm saying? Sports Crib.
They're not part of the tree.
They're not part of the tree?
They have their own trees.
Yeah, but weren't we like on their tree?
No.
We weren't a branch?
No.
Ever?
No.
Okay. So no. We were like, it was like a merging tree.
What?
It was an emerging tree?
No. That doesn't classify as a tree.
I know I'm messing with you. I have no idea what tree part it would be anyway. Anyway, man. So, obviously, you probably heard of it, though. You heard of the play of RG3. You probably saw highlights. And then you probably seen the stats of Kirk Cousins. This is my thing about the game. RG3 played well. People don't want to talk about, well, he missed, you know, he didn't play as well or what. He didn't play well or whatever. He played okay. He played well. Wasn't okay. He played well. He threw a bomb on stride to Pierre Garçon. He scores that touchdown. A lot of folks would say he had a great game. So, for the people that said he had a decent game or a negative game. He scores. Pierre Garçon didn't drop that pass. We're talking about RG3. Oh, he may be back. So I want to hear the talk about RG3, you know, not having a good game. I think that's stupid. Kirk Cousins had a great game. I'm not going to diminish Kirk Cousins' game. He had an awesome game against the second string team. But he did second string defenses. But he played well. He looked like he controlled the offense. He manned the offense. He knew the offense. He was comfortable. He looked comfortable. This is my issue with the whole Kirk Cousins phenomenon. Kirk Cousins has shown us this last season. He is who he is. Every time Kirk Cousins has a great game, it's like a great game via preseason and a regular season. People look at him like, wow, he looks better than RG3. Let me put this out there for people to understand this. What has Kirk Cousins shown us as a Washington Redskins starter? He's shown that he can have a couple good games, and then he goes on to have bad games. He doesn't win as a starter. That's what he's shown us. I don't care what the situation is. As a starter, he can't win. RG3, granted, has struggled since the injury, but he has shown us via its one season, whatever you want to call it, that the man, when he's playing well, he can play at a high level. He can play at a level as being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Grant with his legs and his arm, he's shown us that. We've seen that sample size in a season. When we look at Kirk Cousins, he has shown us. Do you know what? Boom! I'm hot. One game, hot. Two games, hot. Three games, a little bit. Fourth game, I look bad because the defenses have tape on me. And then once I make a mistake, I tend to struggle. That's what we've seen of Kirk Cousins. RG3 has shown us, even though he struggled the last couple seasons, he has shown us. We have seen him play well, and we've seen once he plays well and how long he's, and once he hits that rhythm and he's in that groove, that the team wins and the team can go on the streak. That's what RG3 has shown us.
That was a great rant. I more so was looking at the highlights to see what Johnny Football did versus RG3. Because Johnny Football, I want to see him reach his potential as a football player. I don't know if he's in the right place based on the stats that I've seen. With Cleveland not throwing many touchdowns last year at all, maybe 12 or 13 the entire year. But one thing is Johnny Football, he's been dinking and dunking. He doesn't look as fast in the NFL because it's a faster game. But, yeah, I wasn't necessarily paying much attention to the Redskins and watching the replays.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred Morris looked good, though.
Yeah,
and
he did.
If he can stay healthy, he's going to be key in controlling the clock.
Yeah,
and also keeping the defense off the field, and hopefully finishing the red zone.
Yeah, if watching the game, you can tell that there was a different scheme or style when Kirk Cousins to RG3. When RG3 was in the game, they hand the ball off to Alfred Morris. You know, Alfred Morris a lot. Like Alfred Morris was pretty much the offense, which I have no problem with, to be honest with you. I think that's the way it should be. The team, if you look at what Seattle has done, you've seen what the Niners have done when they won games. When they got the Super Bowl, they won a division. Their star player was one for Seattle, Marshawn Lynch. And if you look at the Niners, their star player was Frank Gore. That was a guy they really relied on. They play action off that. I have no problem they doing that over here. So when the Redskins were just handing the ball off to Alfred Morris, that's the way to go. Play action off of that. RG3 made plays for this team. He off the play action alone in preseason. He hit Pierre Garçon deep for that should have been a touchdown. He had a rollout bootleg play that he had pressure coming right at him, and he stood in there, took the hit, and delivered a good pass to Ryan Grant for a nice game. He made plays. So I'm fine with the team putting all their onus and all their pressure, all their chips on Alfred Morris and making him the star of this team. Now, when Kirk Cousins was in the game, they were all pass happy. Everybody was enamored with Kirk Cousins' decision making. That's fine. That's good. It looks great. But again, at the end of the day, I think the style that RG3 was playing is winning football to me. That's physical football. That's what we see with Seattle. We see that with Seattle. Even all, with all the love that Russell Wilson gets, and deservedly so, he's done good things in Seattle. That the winning style is with Marshawn Lynch. We're touching that rock. We saw what happened in the Super Bowl. Why people were pissed off. They're pissed off that Marshawn Lynch didn't get that 1 yard touchdown and Russell Wilson throwing that interception. That wasn't Russell Wilson's fault, in my opinion. That was the play caller's fault. You had Marshawn Lynch. But again, it goes back to that same premise. We're talking about a guy who is known as the face of the franchise in Seattle. But we all know the face of that, the guy that makes that thing go is Marshawn Lynch. Now, you do the same thing here with Alfred Morris. Make him the linchpin. Make him the face of that offense for real. Not within selling merchandise or whatever, but the face of that offense on that field. But you talk about Johnny Football. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. He does a lot of digging and dunking. He's still elusive though. He's still elusive. He shook a lot of people in that game. for the that were the, of the Redskins pass rushers. Yeah, he's still elusive, but he doesn't throw the ball deep. It's a lot of digging and dunking, a lot of it.
That might be coaching. He has the arm strength.
I'm not saying he doesn't have the arm strength, but he was doing. They're doing a lot of gimmick. Gimmick plays in terms of doing, screen passes, wide receiver screen.
Offense to what they think his strengths are. Yeah. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he had Kyle Shanahan last year, and he still didn't throw the ball downfield.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, again, last year he was adjusting to the speed of the game. It still looks as though he needs that additional time on the field during preseason. I know he played substantial minutes in the Washington game. I think he deserves at least one shot at starter in the preseason in an effort to become more accustomed to the NFL style and again, the speed.
Well, it's a quarterback competition.
No, it's not.
Competition
ain't a starter
already.
Right? That's what I thought.
No, I thought it's a competition. They may say it was a competition. Uh-huh. That's what the Redskins broadcast said. It was a quarterback competition.
Oh, okay.
You know, but so he got his share. I mean, he got the practice against the ones. I mean, I guess for the Redskins, they're ones, and he was. And his O-line was still there. Like, his O-line, the ones on the O-line was still there for him. I look at it like it's going to be McCown's job. That's how it looks to me. But we'll see in terms of anything else. But it wasn't the same dude I saw in college. But the elusiveness, yeah, that was the same dude. And he looked fast enough to me. He had a running touchdown. I was mad at the defense for like breaking containment, allowing him to score a touchdown. But
Peyton Manning could have ran at it. That was wide open.
You think so? Hey, Peyton Manning, that's a stretch though. He can get walked. Peyton Manning, wide open, but Peyton Manning can get walked though. Like, you see Peyton Manning? Are you serious? You think Peyton Manning could have got through that thing?
It's an exaggeration.
I'm about to say because he would have got walked.
That, you get the point.
I totally get the point. Yes, definitely, you could have ran it in. I don't know if I could. I think I'm slow, but I don't think I could have ran it in.
Peyton Manning could have ran at it, I believe. He might have dove at the end, but
I don't know who's slow between him and Eli. Eli's pretty slow too, so.
Peyton is probably the slowest quarterback.
I think Phillip Rivers is slower than Peyton Manning. That is a slow running back. Slow quarterback. That is a very slow quarterback. I'm dead serious.
Peyton ran around like a 4.5 though, right? Coming out.
He was faster than what he is now. I won't say he was a 4.5. He was faster back then. He didn't like to run, but he was faster.
He's gained weight, that's why.
Yeah, he's gotten fat on the low. Like, he's like an old fat man. You see him, he walked like an old fat man. It's amazing to me. But anyway, the Redskins had a bunch of injuries in that game. Cyrus Red, I haven't heard, got the report, but I believe he tore his ACL and his meniscus. You have, what's his name? Niles Paul, out for the season, dislocated ankle. So other players lost for the season. The Redskins took a hit. Before then, Niles Paul was on the depth chart as the number one tight end for the Washington Redskins. Now, I guess that bumps up Jordan Reed to be the number one tight end. Though, to me, Jordan Reed was the better tight end, so he should have been starting. So, I guess. Huh?
Paulson?
They can't hear you on the mic, dude. You're talking far away.
I was talking to you, though.
Oh, you said Paulson? You said what, Paulson?
Y'all lost two tight ends, right?
Well, Paulson was hurt before the game. He was hurt before the game.
He's out for the season, right?
No, not for the season. He's just going to be out for a while, though. I don't think he's out for the season. I don't think he's out for the season. You can check that out right now. I don't think he's out for the season, though. You have Paulson. So, for me, but Paul being out, it's going to hurt because he worked hard and got his body in good shape. I've heard they had rave reviews about how hard he's worked during the offseason. So,
yeah, Redskins, Logan Paulson needs surgery, out for the year.
Oh, he is? Okay, yeah. So he's out for the year. So, they're going to need another blocking tight end because Paulson's a great blocking tight end. I'm a fan of Jordan Reed, so this gives Jordan Reed more work. Hopefully, he's a better pass block, a better run blocker, and even pass blocker at times.
Chris Cooley was mulling a comeback.
That's what I'm talking about. I was going to mention that too. Talking about Chris Cooley. Go ahead, you guys. He's not mulling. He wants a comeback. It's official now.
Well, yeah, but not. He wasn't mulling a comeback to Washington though. I thought it was Arizona or
somewhere else. It wasn't DC.
But now they look like they could use him, even though he's not. He's a solid blocker.
He's a solid blocker.
Yeah,
he's good. A solid blocker.
I feel like he was washed up. Maybe he's in better shape now. He took a few years off. I would take Aaron Hernandez straight out of prison before I take
Here you go. Here you go. I don't know where he gets that. We had a debate right now. I'm not doing that. I'm not taking
straight
that.
Out of prison.
I'm not taking that.
I'll take.
I'm not taking that bait. I'm not taking that bait. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it.
don't know. Are there any other tight ends available?
No, that's why I...
Oh.
You said Algie Crump. You said is what? Algie Crump. I'm not taking Algie Crump, though. No, Chris Cooley. No fat running dude. No fat dude with speed. He was amazing to me. Huh? Algie Crump was amazing to me. No, we're Nats down 1-0 to the San Francisco Giants. It's only one. That's only for, it's the fourth inning. He'll be
I
all right.
I want to watch Andy Murray versus Djokovic. I didn't want to watch this game.
I was being nice to you.
No, baseball is pretty rough to watch.
Andy Murray, Djokovic. The Joker. Is it on? It's on?
Wrong station.
Oh, he's on. Sir. There you go. No problem, man. No problem. I'm a team player, man.
Yeah. Anyway, seriously, though, I know I'm joking a bit, but would you be happy with him signing Chris Cooley?
Yes, I'd be ecstatic. I would love for him to sign Chris Cooley. You got a guy who's the opposite of Jordan Reed anyway.
So is Chris Cooley leaving the radio?
He would.
I mean, so he's still on radio unless
he's still, yeah. Mm-hmm. He would. He's training. He misses football a lot. I didn't know he missed it this much. So like until I caught the radio and he was talking about it. He misses a lot. He misses the camaraderie. So yeah, I would love to have Chris Cooley. You know, and I think he could teach Jordan Reed some things too about playing the position. To be honest, I thought he would have been good for Nyles Paul because now Paul gets open because of the design of a play and also because he's fast because he's faster than the most tight ends because he used to play wide receiver. So he alone. His route running could be better. And Chris Cooley was good with unscheduled plays, so he could learn from Nyles Paul. He could learn from Chris Cooley. Reed, I think Chris Cooley can teach Jordan Reed how to block a little better because his blocking is horrible. But he's such a good route runner as a tight end. It works out for him. But I would love to have Chris Cooley there. The knowledge, and also again, he's the opposite of Jordan Reed, so it works out.
Here's why I don't want Chris Cooley. I'm not a Redskins fan. First of all, I'm not going to take away from his talent.
Of course
but
not.
He was not producing at the same level when we had that argument at the time. You know that.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't.
But here's why I don't want Chris Cooley in my locker room, because he's just fresh out the media. He has said some just really critical things about RG3, beyond constructive criticism. It's been personal.
Not mean, nothing terrible, though.
To me, he has.
He's been nicer compared to some of the other folks.
Well, none of the other folks are going to become teammates.
That's true.
So, also, let's say the Skins are having a good year. Let's say they're not. No matter what type of season they're having, let's say you turn on ESPN, an unnamed Redskin player is saying, you're going to automatically say, it's probably him. You know he's cool with Zaven and this, that. I wouldn't trust him if he came back. I don't think he's good for the locker room. Also, the coach has been heavily criticized and mocked on that show that Chris Cooley
that is true.
Appeared on. I think it's a bad dynamic for their locker room. That's why I don't bring him back.
That is true. That is a valid point. I didn't think about that.
85.
I won't call you 85% for that, though. That's an opinionated point. That's not a percentage thing.
It's the tree, man.
Hey, it's the tree. The power. 85. You got an 85% tree? You should, dude. You should. You should have a tree of folks that come out the 85% way. You know what I'm saying? You do have a tree. You know, in your own little way, you have a tree. You know, because you're a blessed individual, you have a tree of your own.
Oh, well.
You do. Think about it. You do. You have a tree.
I have a fitness tree.
Hey, you definitely have a fitness tree. Juice not good for you, though, that tree.
Hey, man. Another conversation.
Your tree is like that, though.
Not going to go there.
I'm just playing, man. Your tree is like that. I'm not playing, though.
Hey.
But your tree is good, though. Because I was on that tree, and that tree was, you know, as an individual, I think, because of you, man, I believe in fitness, man. Thanks for that tree. That tree was a great tree, man. Who wants to have a tree? Yeah, you have a tree.
You got some girls on the tree, though, under you. So
yeah.
You're responsible for the tree now. You got to fertilize the tree.
You're the worst, dude.
You're responsible for the tree.
Oh, my God. You are the man. That's the reason I'm a Wizards fan. For the players who stood out during that game, I mentioned, obviously, Kirk Cousins did stand out, so I won't knock him. My man, Ross, the wide receiver, he stood out, played real well. Andre Roberts played well with Kirk Cousins, but he stood out in a whole different way because he sucked in the beginning. And all of a sudden, when Kirk Cousins came, he played better. He fumbled, and then all of a sudden, he made plays as a receiver. Defensively, I like what Trent Murphy did defensively. I thought he put pressure on the quarterback. He broke contain a little bit. The rookie Smith out of Mississippi State played well. He had a sack. Trying to think of one. I actually like the way Morgan Moses played at right tackle. They moved Morgan Moses to right tackle and put the Brandon Scherff, the first round pick, for the Washington Redskins at right guard. The line played well, so I liked Morgan Moses, what he did at right tackle. And especially if you think about it, how usually in preseason, people were real vanilla. The Browns were blitzing, and RG3 had time in the pocket because of how they picked up the blitz. So I was impressed with the O-line as a whole.
What are we discussing next?
After this, we're about to go on break. Oh, the Redskins-Texans brawl.
Oh, okay, because I was having a bit of a debate with my family members, who some of which are Miami fans, and they were saying that Brent Grimes can check D'Angelo Hall 1-on-1.
Well, Brent Grimes can check D'Angelo Hall 1-on-1?
I mean, Deshaun Jackson 1-on-1, my bad. And
that's a joke.
Exactly. That's nobody the same thing can. I said. They are huge Brent Grimes fans. I mean, as if he never played in Atlanta. Like, I don't know who.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's like 5'7".
Yeah.
Like, but I just want to get your opinion. You already said it, though. It's a joke.
No, not at all. He can't do it. It's a joke.
That's a winnable opening day game for the Skins.
I don't know if it's winnable, because I think the Dolphins' defense is going to be. No, I don't like Tannehill.
I don't either.
I'm not a Tannehill fan by any stretch of imagination.
I think he's inconsistent. That's why I don't like him.
I mean, it's winnable. It's home because it's a home game, right? Yeah, so it's winnable because it's at home. Right,
I don't think home field matters with the Redskins.
Yeah, dude, he doesn't.
For one of the most quote passionate fan bases, they're also one of the most fragile fan bases.
Look, I mean, it's the first game, so everybody's gonna be there. So that's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean? If the Redskins are up 20-0 third quarter, people in the stadium are usually still nervous.
Yeah, of course.
They're gonna lose the lead.
Of course. Have you watched the Redskins play?
Versus, you know, I'm a Falcons fan. I feel pretty comfortable if we're up 20-0.
You should.
No, I shouldn't. Atlanta hasn't been good either, but I'm just saying, I've been in that stadium, and there's anxiety until 000s are on the scoreboard, for real. I'm serious. It's a winnable game, though. Anyway, didn't mean to take you off topic.
No, it's good. No, actually, that's a good point, man.
Texas brawl. The D.C. has been on the losing end of brawls, and I'm tired of it. Georgetown first lost in China, and now the Skins.
Why you say they lost? I don't think they lost.
They were because they were kids, right? Grown men beating up kids. That was your argument.
What, the Georgetown thing?
Yeah.
You darn right it was a grown man fighting kids. That's not even fair. That's not fair. That's not fair at all.
Hey, man, look.
I'm talking the Redskins lost that fight.
I was watching Floyd Mayweather. Who was he fighting? When my man had his hands down.
Oh, Ortiz.
Victor Ortiz. Ortiz. And, everybody on Facebook and social media put hand down, man down. You know, they thought it was the best thing ever. When I felt like it wasn't fair. And people basically said life isn't fair. So, Geno Smith got punched. He wasn't looking like.
We'll talk about that. That's dirty. We'll talk about that too later. That's dirty, though. Just was dirty.
Well, he was looking, but
he wasn't looking. He got sucker punched.
He got sucker punched. He wasn't looking. I mean,
he was looking. Fair. He wasn't thinking it was going to go down.
It wasn't fair.
Yeah, it wasn't fair. Hands down, man down. I guess same thing applies. Finger down, man down. Whatever you want to call it. But yeah, man, Texans. I don't think it was a big deal. People fight. Whoop-de-doo. It is what it is.
I watched Hard Knocks and I didn't see it. Now maybe I missed that part.
I don't watch Hard Knocks, but I heard it was on there though. It was on there. Uh-huh.
You heard it was supposed to be on there, or you heard it actually?
I think it's supposed to be on there.
Well, right, that's what I heard too. But I watched most of it and I didn't see it.
But you saw D Hall. You saw what happened to D Hall, though, right?
No. What happened to D Hall?
You got to look at the clips on social media. Oh, what's his name? Hopkins. Oh, freak the bejesus out that dude. Like he almost tore his Achilles again. He bent back funny, dude. Like it was bad. During the break, I'll show it to you. Like it's not cool at all. Not cool at all. Anyway, it's about time for commercial break. I don't feel like talking about the brawl. The brawl was overrated to me anyway. I just put it on the outline just to put it on the outline anyway. Anyway, when we come back from break, we'll talk about the NFL preseason. We'll talk about Geno Smith getting his jaw broken. How do you say his name? Dude's name.
Ancapali.
You good? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's close. You're close enough. Geno's getting the jaw broke. Phillip Rivers got signed. He got a contract extension. You know, 4 years or five?
Oh, it was four?
Four. I think it's 4 years.
Oh.
It is, man. We'll talk about it during the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Doses. The tree. Because Ray said that. All right. We'll be back from break.
Seems to help. I go and look at a stonecutter hammering away at his rock. Perhaps 100 times, without so much as a crack showing in it. Yet at the 101st blow, it was split in two. And I know it was not that blow that did it, but all those that came before.
Life is good. Life is good.
Life is good. Life is good. Life is good. Life is good.
Shout out to Urban Sports Team and Wally and Will. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all. Keep up the support. We'll keep, you know, we'll keep the hits coming.
Thank you, Skylar Diggins. I appreciate the love. That's Skylar Diggins. She listened to the Urban Sports thing. She did, you know what I mean, back in the day. She retweeted this. She retweeted that thing, right? Don't make that look, man. She retweeted. And Skylar Diggins showing love to the Urban Sports thing, man. I love her too anyway. Very good girl, man. What you want to say, man? You close out. You want to say something?
No. I was making sure I was prepared.
I dig. Anyway, man, like I said before the break, talk about some the preseason games. Let's start off with the Ravens, since they are local enough. The Ravens Saints game. Recap: the Ravens won the game in the last second. I believe it was like 30-27. It was a good game. Flacco looked good. Flacco looks like he's improved. He's looking. He's taking his game to another level. You don't like Flacco?
I do. I do like Flacco. And prior to the break, we were discussing fairness. And I'm serious. Drew Brees won a Super Bowl. He's quickly been anointed the best thing ever. Right. Aaron Rodgers, too. Although Aaron Rodgers, to me, has been more consistent than Brees. One could argue.
Yeah,
Brees
one could
stole
argue.
So much.
Yeah.
But in spite of the fact that Flacco has a ring, he's treated as though the preseason still matters, as if his job is still on the line. Like, let's see what Flacco looks like tonight versus, you know, I think he's earned the right where preseason shouldn't matter for him. It's his job.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I really think that he's not getting a fair shake. But they did pay him, so I guess that comes with expectations. But, you know, when you compare him to guys who have won, especially one Super Bowl, Brett Favre is one who threw a lot of Brett Favre was a bit more, I guess, celebrated than Flacco is. But to me, Flacco has won some big games. He's gone to New England and won constantly. Why is it so important for him to play well in the first preseason game?
No,
I don't get it.
Well, I'm not the biggest Flacco fan. But he has. Every season I've seen him improve, and this season to me it seems like he has more ownership of everything. He just seems like he's more confident. But I agree with you. He's won a Super Bowl, I shouldn't have to assess him. Like, I should, Joe Flacco, he played well, whatever. It is what it is. You're right. I should, you know, that's the way I should think. But I never deemed him as an elite quarterback initially, but now, you know, maybe I'm just hating. I don't know, but what I saw, he looks really good. Accurate throws. The deep ball he throws is as accurate as anybody in the NFL. He has a cannon. He's mobile. He is mobile enough for the position. I just feel like he has a better understanding of the team, and it is his team. Before, you know, I think it's maybe the stigma of it being like an Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs, you know, whoever, or even Anata. I looked at those were the leaders of the team. Like, those were the guys I felt like owned this team. But now, when I look at this Ravens team, it's a Joe Flacco team. It's Joe Flacco's Ravens.
You named those three guys, Ed Reed being one who was extremely vocal in criticizing Joe Flacco. He can do that. It's Ed Reed. He wanted to win, and he basically said the defense is going to do its part. You got to do your part over there. And again, Joe Flacco did. Now I wonder what the Ravens' mindset is going beyond the season, considering Torrey Smith is saying this is his last.
I mean, Steve Smith.
Steve Smith saying Steve Smith. My bad. I said Torrey. Same last name. Steve Smith saying this is his last. I'm wondering if if they're going to, you know, try to make a move mid season to pick up a receiver. I don't know who at this point, but I'm just throwing that point out there. To think, though, that it's Joe Flacco's team does scare me a bit, though.
It is, though.
Because he does not
Ray Rice
me, he does not strike me as a leader. I think it's Harbaugh's team. seriously, he's a good coach, someone who appears to get the most out of his players, well-respected.
Leader of men.
The reason why I did not like Flacco in the past is because there were constant comparisons with him and Matt Ryan. And
I knew that was coming.
And Matt Ryan was not put in the same situation. Mm-hmm. Now, they both had rookie head coaches, yes. But the Ravens had an established defense. If you gave Atlanta that defense, I believe Matt Ryan would have multiple championships. Look how close he got Atlanta a few times.
That's true. Those are all valid points.
So Joe Flacco really, from Ed Reed's perspective, wasn't taking advantage of the opportunities that he was given. And the fact that he choked. And also, there was some luck involved. There's always luck involved. Like Ray Allen hitting a shot to tie the finals against San Antonio. It's some luck involved. Denver had
that bomb. Yeah, I know. That was so lucky.
Joe Flacco, I get it. People are still not high on him. But
Eli Manning had some luck too.
I'm just saying, typically a Super Bowl, that solidifies it's your job to lose. You go to Cincinnati. They know Dalton is their quarterback. No ifs, ands, or buts. They're not worried about how he looks in preseason, really. For real, I don't. Who's threatening him? Who's the backup?
Winston has no threat.
Who? Flacco?
No threat.
No, but the microscope that he's under.
Oh, okay.
I think it's unfair.
And Dalton has a microscope, though.
Does he?
Yeah, he does. He really does.
I don't think he does. It's probably growing since they're not winning in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But they, as far as Cincinnati fans go, they need to have the same appreciation for just getting to the playoffs, like Atlanta or the Falcons.
I totally agree.
When the Redskins went to the playoffs, that was one of the most exciting things for Redskins fans. Yeah. Even though Seattle beat them, they were up 14-0. They are having sustained success. They do have a nice young core.
Mm-hmm.
What are you complaining about? I think, again, it's no questions asked. Phillip Rivers has never won a title, but yet his job has never been on the line, in my opinion.
Because he's great. He's great at what he does.
He's had some down years.
He's had one down year, one ugly year. He had one really terrible year.
Yeah, but sometimes he does not make big throws in big moments.
Yeah, I agree.
I cannot recall Phillip Rivers game-winning drive right on the jump. Maybe you have, but I can't.
That playoff run.
It's hard to think about.
The playoff run. I mean, there's nothing dramatic. Like, no, there is dramatic, but there's nothing like there's. I think everybody has that key moment to me in a postseason game. So I don't look at regular season like drives because they don't mean nothing to me. Because it's regular season. Unless it's important for a playoff run. Like you need that win for a playoff run. But I've seen Phillip Rivers have a game winning drive. He had one against the Ravens too. And for a game winning field goal. He's had them. But they're not special to me because they're not a playoff. It's not a playoff W.
The point being is I feel like there's certain quarterbacks in the league that do not have a ring, but yet,
like Flacco has moments.
You know their place. Their starting job is not on the line. Preseason doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You're preparing for the regular season. Not a big deal. I mean, Matt Ryan is like that. Obviously he's the best quarterback on the team, but we're not looking at his every move like Flacco. Maybe it's because I'm not in Atlanta and in Cincinnati.
Yeah. But
it's just a perception to me. It really is. There are times where I understand it. Like Cam Newton is constantly scrutinized. I get it.
He's the number one overall pick,
and he's had a lot of character issues.
Yeah,
I get that. But Joe Flacco has no character issues. I believe he may have only had one losing season, if that, since he's been with Baltimore. He's gotten better. Maybe the team success does not always equal Flacco's success, vice versa. But I just don't get it. Anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on the Ravens, though.
You mentioned Steve Smith anyway. Steve Smith is retiring, like you said. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
No, he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He'll be a Hall of Famer, but not a first ballot, I don't think. I don't know who's going to be in his class, though.
That depends, too. That does depend. Who's in your class? I think, I agree with you. Depending on if his class is average, I believe he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, only because I have respect for his style and his brand, being a 5'10 wide receiver who played football at the toughest level. He played it like he was 6'4", 6'5". He wasn't like not like Santana Moss, who just caught go routes or just did a screen and go. Steve Smith can do that, but if you threw a bomb out there, he would use the turn. I use the turn that everybody else is used for a small man. He would moss it. He can moss something for a small man. Mm-hmm. So when I look at him, I look at him as a dominant wide receiver period. Not even for his size, period. In his prime, oh my god, he was a scary dude. Like seriously, he was a scary dude. He for many years he'd be up there in the league with yards. I remember having him in fantasy football. The dude was like getting 1,400 yards every season. He would have games where he'd get like four, three touchdowns.
I can't think of another guy to compare him to.
Yeah,
Deshaun Jackson could surpass him.
But he's not. But he don't play to the physical level that Steve Smith would play.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Not. But I'm just as far as height, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, Santana Moss had when in his healthy years, he played big too. He could catch a bomb over someone.
But not. Yeah, I know. What
but
you're
not
saying.
Like Steve Smith. Yeah. Steve Smith can block. Steve Smith was intimidating.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, I had to see Steve Smith,
of course,
Atlanta fan twice a year, and D Hall constantly was going back and forth, and it never worked out for D Hall. Never worked out for D Hall, man. And D Hall to some degree was intimidated by Steve Smith. But again, it's Steve Smith who has shut him down. I do think he benefited from a consistent running game. In Carolina, they had a good running game for many years there. But overall, man, great player, good dude, somebody you would want on your team, definitely.
Yes, Steve Smith is a guy that I feel like I have so much respect for as a football player. He's definitely a special talent. But anyway, let's go to the other preseason games. The Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota had their debuts on Saturday. From what you've seen via highlights or whatever, what was your thought process of their debut? I know it's because Mariota played against Atlanta Falcons. We'll talk about Atlanta right after this discussion, though.
I guess I'll start with Jameis then.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what I saw, Jameis actually, from the highlights, of course, I didn't watch the game.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
He seemed comfortable out there. He did not seem like he was rattled by the moment at all. Obviously, he has adjustments to make. As I said about Johnny Manziel, it's a much faster game. And even for Michael Vick, you know, he said it was like a whirlwind that first game. And I feel like he probably experienced the same thing yesterday. I think people made too much of his reads. And I like the fact that he ran for a touchdown. I think that's important for him because in college, it just seemed like he couldn't get tackled. Like the tackling was just bad. But to see him run for – but again, that was an open run too. I could have ran that in. So
he showed more speed than I thought, though, than he did in college.
Well, he's faster than he looks. Mm-hmm. He's like a Terrell Pryor. He has deceptive speed. I don't think I could take anything from it. I guess the third preseason game, I'll be able to make a better assessment of
Jameis.
Yeah, because Andrew Luck to me started out slow in his first preseason game, and I didn't think much of it. Big deal. And he was a number one pick as well.
That's true.
Yeah.
When I looked at Jameis, I thought, you know, from what I read and even the highlights I saw initially, it just looked like it was too, you know how Jameis is. He was too amped up, you know, too emotional into the game. You know how Jameis, when you watch him before a game, you know, he's into it. Like that kid that's just so excited that he's everywhere. That's how he played in the beginning of that game from what I saw and what I read. Highlights, I'm with you, though. I think he looked comfortable once he settled down. He looked really comfortable. I like that he throws people open. Now, even on that interception, he threw it to a spot, which I like. He anticipated the route, and unfortunately, you know, he didn't see it. His eyes played a trick on him in a certain way, but I like that he anticipates throws. That's the role of a good quarterback. That's what a good quarterback does. We look at Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck throws a lot of interceptions because he anticipate plays. But no one badmouths Andrew Luck for throwing an interception. They don't look at him like, whoa, he's turnover prone. But because Andrew Luck's so great at throwing the ball, we all look over it. To me, Jameis Winston's the same way. He's an accurate pass. He threw that bomb to Vincent Jackson. It was on the money. He threw the out pass, anticipated the route, on the money. He made that nice run. Now, granted, his outing wasn't good. It wasn't the greatest outing of a period. But when you look at some of the throws he made, it was you can say, okay, wow, he does have potential to be a star quarterback in this league. So that's how I look at Jameis Winston. I look at him as all right. Well, he struggled. He's a rookie. It's the first NFL game. You know, it's preseason. But he will get better. He showed us, and he's a winner too. He's shown us in college that he can improve. He gets better, and he plays the quarterback position. He doesn't play it as a gimmick quarterback. He plays the quarterback position. And when I look at Mariota, I look at Mariota's outing against Atlanta Falcons. Again, I didn't get to watch it, but I saw highlights and I read about it. From the highlights, I saw the turnovers, the screen pass interception. That was something that he didn't, you know, obviously his eyes played a trick on him. It was a bad pass. It was, you know, he had two turnovers off the bat. He had that screen. Then it was the fumble for a touchdown. But I saw a couple good throws by Mariota that surprised me. He had one. He rolled out to the right, to the left, and he avoided the rush and hit. I want to say Walker. It was a wide receiver between a small window. So I was impressed by that. I was impressed by that pass. I wanted to see highlights of him running. I want to see how fast he is compared to the other athletes, the NFL defenders, to see if he had that same kind of speed compared to what he was in Oregon. Oregon, like, he ran away from everybody. I wanted to see that speed. I wanted to see him throw the deep ball a little bit more. And also, we always talked about his arm strength, that it wasn't as strong as Jameis. But I did see him get sacked. It looked like he couldn't avoid pressure. It looked like in that regard, in the backfield, that he wasn't as elusive as, say, you know, in Oregon. So those are the things I saw about Mariota.
The biggest takeaway for me is Mariota's going to have to adjust to pressure in the NFL. He didn't look comfortable, as we described Jameis Winston. And this is what caused the turnovers, him being pressured. And this is Atlanta. Atlanta, who has not rendered much pressure over the past two seasons. Obviously, some changes in there. But if you expect to go against the top teams in the AFC and think that you're going to be clean the entire game, because he's a phenomenal athlete, so yeah, he should be able to escape the pocket. He's made some adjustments from what I've seen. They were raving about how he hands the ball off different. when not pressured and when able to see the field, he makes good choices. I think he did that in college, but everyone coming out thought, you know, it's going to be an adjustment for him, because at Oregon, people were open all the time.
Wide open.
So it was much easier. I'm thinking that, again, by the third game, I want to see if his comfort level changes. But I wouldn't be surprised if he has a solid season. Like I said, he's a good kid. He's a great athlete. He makes good decisions. But how are you going to deal with pressure? RG3 is learning that now, how to throw the ball away. It's going to be important for him just to work on the fundamentals, especially, like I said, when being forced out of the pocket. That's it for Mariota for me.
All right, so talk about Atlanta. I mean, you mentioned they played Atlanta. What did you think of your performance by the Falcons? I'll say this, though. I saw Julio Jones. He looks bigger. I mean that in a good way. Like, he looked ripped. Like, he's bigger than he was last season. So he looks like he's more physically imposing at the wide receiver position. But go ahead.
Excuse me. I'm hoping that Julio can stay healthy. Obviously, Julio is always going to show up and play. He's going to garner double teams. Overall, the offense looked good, but I guess I'm a bit anxious with Kyle Shanahan now being the offensive coordinator. I want to see the run game look better, and it didn't. Anton Smith obviously has game-breaking ability, but he's not a number one back. I think Falcons fans as a whole, we all want to see Devontae Freeman be the guy. He can catch out the backfield. Now, is Kyle Shanahan his father? Can any running back excel in that system? That's what I want to see. Because if so, I don't care who the running back is. I want Alfred Morris. I thought the Raiders want to trade him. The offense, though, looked good. I mean, Matt Ryan did not have an incompletion. But I expect that from Matt Ryan at this stage of his career. I expect Julio Jones to play well. I expect the offense to play well. I was not happy again with the running game or the offensive line. I'm thinking that the offensive line is working harder in practice now with a better defense, which is my segue into Atlanta's defense, and everybody in the media in Atlanta saying, oh, man, it looks so much better. Bavino always gives us teases. Mm-hmm. He always gives us teases, though. So I'm hoping, again, that he can put together a consistent season. If the old William Moore returns, I think we'll be fine. The corner position, we're solid. Vic Beasley, everybody's excited about him. He was double-teamed, only played 10 plays, though. But all of us in the Atlanta fan base have to be excited about any sort of pass rush. After watching a non-existent pass rush with the dude from Real Housewives. Corey Bierman.
Bierman, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been the same.
Is he still on the same?
Yeah. We had OC.
He's not there anymore, though.
No,
right?
But I mean, I'm just speaking of the horrible years that we've had in the past, two seasons where our defense, after Abraham, had no pass rush. And right now, first preseason game, looked decent. Again, when you strap up the cleats for the first game, first real game, that's when I'm going to really pay attention. I'm not excited about the depth. I mean, in one Atlanta publication, they really, I think, minimized the fact that Atlanta has no depth. They said Atlanta came out looking strong. Of course, the second and third stringers gave the game away, essentially, even though Atlanta didn't lose. But they didn't look good. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. With the league the way it is now, there are a lot of injuries, and a lot of early injuries. How many people over the past several years have been lost for the season in the preseason? I can't name them all, but I'm sure it's a lot. Redskins have two people already.
Yeah, two.
I mean, sometimes it's just in practice. Yeah. It's just in practice.
In practice alone.
Where people are lost for the season. Last year, preseason, one of our top offensive linemen out for the season, torn Achilles. It's hard to stay healthy in today's game with the athleticism. I mean, look at J.J. Watt alone. He's a freak.
You know what I mean? He may be on something, but go ahead.
No, he's eating 9,000 calories a day.
Yeah, here.
Bacon wrapped chicken and all that stuff. So,
yeah, beach, man.
I was speaking to Sam Baker, by the way. Out for the season last year. Torn Achilles preseason. I'm excited that Brian Cox is still on the staff, and I'm hoping that some of the rookies from last season can start to have a bigger impact this year.
I'm excited about the wide receiver battle that's going on with the Falcons. Leonard Hankerson right now, I believe he's like the third string wide receiver on the team. He had a catch for 13 yards. So I want to see how he can emerge to help out Roddy White, Julio Jones, especially the depth for the Atlanta Falcons. The wide receiver position is needed because you mentioned Julio Jones being injured, but Roddy White is an individual. I feel like it's hurt a lot. But he's such a talented guy. I love Roddy White. He's such a talented guy. When he's on the field, it makes the world easy for Matt Ryan and a Julio Jones. You can't double team a Julio Jones like you want to when Roddy White's there at 100%. He just could, because he's that dynamic as a wide receiver. Because he's a good route runner, he's a good hands guy. He's a number one when healthy. So I want to see the emergence of some wide receiver because they lost Douglas. But I want to see the emergence of some wide receiver out there to help him out.
Yeah, Harry Douglas was a hit or miss, though.
Because of injuries, though, right?
Yeah, his ups and downs. Yeah, but, I mean, well, injuries really affected his speed, though, which hurt him, I believe. But I think most importantly, Atlanta believes that there's a solid coach in place now that can take this team to the next level with some changes. And that's going to be the main focal point for Atlanta fans.
To bring a physical play, right? Because he's Seattle, so he's got to be physical, right?
Like I said, it's going to be some serious personnel moves in the coming future, but everybody's excited about what he brings to the table with Dan Quinn as a coach.
All right, it's cool. Let's talk about Geno Smith. Geno Smith.
Rashid Hageman. Well, that's why I want to see what he's good, but he was a baby on Hard Knocks. So.
All right, Geno Smith is going to be out 6 to 10 weeks because then Jets linebacker Ike Emipolli. Emipolli. Did I say it right? Emipolli, whatever. Punched him in the face. Punched him in the jaw for real. Not in the face, but in the jaw. We heard reports. Man, what's your idea? What's your thought process? Do you think from what you heard it's Geno's fault? Do you have folks out there saying you shouldn't put a finger in somebody's face or whatever? So do you think it's Geno's fault?
I think he was responding to disrespect. Probably didn't expect to be punched, clearly. But from what I understand, a lot of fights in NFL locker rooms go unreported. What I think made it significant was that it was unfootball related. Mm-hmm. It was non-football related. It's not like they were on the practice field and somebody delivered a cheap hit, kind of like Cam Newton. Cam Newton just got blasted. That wasn't a cheap hit.
Oh yeah.
But it wasn't the same thing. We're talking about.
Beat that dude down now.
We're talking about. I compare it to when Gilbert Arenas got into it with Javaris Crittenden over some over a dice game or gambling. Yeah. It has nothing to do with sports, and it has no place in a professional sports locker room, especially when you're getting paid the way you are. It's just ridiculous. And also, if you want to win, now you have Ryan Fitzpatrick as your starter quarterback. IK isn't even on the team anymore.
He's irrelevant. Now,
yeah, I mean, no one knew who he was until this.
He's known. And the NFL Network, they like on highlights, they highlight this dude now on plays. Like, for real, we're talking about a third stringer. Like, Evan Polly's in the game. It's like he's now been famous because of it.
Again, it has nothing to do with football. It has no place. You kind of feel bad for Geno because he's been under a lot of scrutiny, bad team, a lot of dysfunction, and it was time for him to be able to emerge from that and be a better football player. You are one of many believers that Geno has the talent to succeed in the league. I still think there's a lot of question marks surrounding, but Nick Mangold in particular was saying this is the best he looked mm-hmm. since he's been with the Jets, and he was highly upset about how that went down.
See what I'm saying? So Nick Mangold said that. Yep. So that's what I'm saying. You listen to people like Ryan Clark from ES from the Four Letter stating like it's all like it's Geno's at fault for it. You had Chris Carter come out of his mouth saying like he holds Geno responsible for the situation. I'm like, dude got punched in the face like and didn't expect it. Like when I grew up, when you about to fight somebody, hands were up, you knew it was going down. Like that was a fight. You don't like walk up to somebody and just steal them in the jaw, like punch them in the jaw, punch them in the jaw. Like, that's stupid. And then you, like, it's just dumb. I'm sorry. I don't even know how to play. It's just dumb. And then for people to kind of, like, say, you know what, we need to hold Geno at fault with this. And then it's dumb in its own right. Just because, folks, all right, one, his homie died, he ain't come to your event. You should understand that alone off that alone. Even if he didn't come up to you and folks told you this, you should just took that and said, all right, man, your homie died. I dig.
Communication was poor, but it does not render a punch. I'm sorry. Yeah. Again, it's unfootball related. It has no place. And all media reports say that this guy had a history of, you know, character issues. And it's not a surprise. He's young. And typically we make bad decisions when we're younger. I think he's going to learn from because he literally put his NFL future at risk. If Rex was not coaching right now, if he decided to go to television, then this guy wouldn't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a scary future for him based on the fact that he expects to feed his family with income from professional football.
Yeah.
The NFL in particular, which pays better than anybody.
It's me, again, like Geno, because Geno, again, what you mentioned before, because Geno, this is an important season for Geno. And for to have his season as a starter in jeopardy because one dude lost his cool, I think it's just jacked up. I mean, this is a good chance to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And this is a team that's actually talented enough for you to do something with. You got Brandon Marshall. Decker's now a number two wide receiver. The defense is stacked now. You know what I mean? This is a team that, to be honest with you, you can look good and your career as a starting quarterback in the NFL could be something special. The reason why I say this is because we know that situations make quarterbacks look better. You have a true number one, Brandon Marshall, Decker. You can put up stats, and then people can be like, oh, yeah, Geno Smith, yeah, he's the real deal. In all honesty, he may not be as good because of the talent around him, but he's going to look like the real deal. So, I mean, I pose a question like, you know, how, you know, Geno Smith and what happened with him being punched. My man Aaron Jay said he's going to find him and do what? Get his blank punch in the face again. I was like, what would happen? You know, if I'm Geno Smith, I should be pissed off. I mean, if I see, if I see Evan Polly in person and I've already, you know, I'm not a starting quarterback anymore. I'm going to find this dude. I'm gonna punch him in the face. I'm going to punch him back because you ruined my career. Because truth be told, this man had the potential to ruin this man's career. Like, seriously. Because the NFL, you get typecasted.
Well, the good thing is, for Geno, you got Ryan Fitzpatrick in front of you who played in the same division. I don't care if he played under Chan Gailey or not. He can't extend plays like Geno can.
True.
Todd Bowles is looking to change culture and looking to win. He's a good football mind. He's not going to keep Geno on the bench just because of this incident. If he wants to win, which everybody does, and that's the main reason why they're angry, the Jets players I'm speaking of, they're angry because they want to win. And they feel like their chances are, you know, now not as good without Geno there. You got Miami supposedly coming back improved. Everybody's excited about them. New England speaks for itself. Buffalo has Rex, your former coach. You want to contend in your own division, let alone the conference. And an incident, again, that's an injury non-related to football. You can't lose people like that. I hate stuff like that. Yeah, I really do.
And also, I read this one thing off to what my man said. My man Jeremy Gore, the commissioner, said Geno sucks. Geno doesn't suck. All right, commissioner, he doesn't suck. He's got give him talent. He had talent. He can be good. He can be good. But real quick, since it's not a football related situation, do you think the linebacker? Because I'm not gonna say his name anymore. Should he be suspended?
Oh, he's going to be.
He's going
to.
Okay.
And also, the Jets are exploring criminal charges.
That's, I feel like it should be. Like, I think that should be in play.
It's going to be ultimately up to Geno, though, if he wants to
press charges,
to go through with that. And depending on his mindset, based on what I'm seeing,
I don't think he's worried about it.
I can't get a good gauge on what type of guy he is. Mm-hmm. Are you a young guy that you're worried about your street credibility? No, I'm not personal charges.
Yeah.
Are you a guy that you're going to take the responsible route? I have a broken jaw about 6 to 10 weeks. I'm pressing charges. Period.
I'm thinking, me too.
You shouldn't be able to play if I can't play.
Exactly. That's what I feel like by you playing that preseason game is a slap in my face. I agree with you. Like, if you playing, is a slap. I totally agree. Slap in my face. I agree with that whole thought process. Let's go to the Eagles and Chip Kelly. Sam Bradford is expected to sign a contract, was working on a contract extension, but I don't want to even talk about that. I want to talk about a topic that you brought up a couple weeks ago. I didn't have an opportunity to put on the show. But what do you, who, You talked about Teddy Bridgewater, how, you know, good he looked last season and looked like he's going to improve. Adrian Peterson coming to town, coming back from suspension. You seen Sam Bradford back from injury on an Eagles team that looks like can do some things. They just beat in preseason, just beat the who were they playing? I got to think about this. Wait a minute. Think about it. Can't think about it. They beat somebody 36-10. I'm trying to think who the Eagles just played. Oh, the Colts. They beat the Colts 36-10. Who do you think is going to have a better year, Sam Bradford or Teddy Bridgewater?
It's sad because Teddy Bridgewater was he was the one that flew under the radar last night against Jameis.
Yeah, he played well. Yeah, he's good.
Teddy Bridgewater was being compared to Peyton Manning, if people remember.
At a certain level, yeah.
I think that with Adrian, I thought Adrian Peterson coming back was going to be huge for him.
It is.
I personally am going to go with Bridgewater now. I'm hesitant because, I mean, you know Sam Bradford is talented.
Mm.
However, I don't like the Eagles receiving corps.
Yeah, I don't like him either.
So if there's an injury on the offensive line.
That could be doomed.
Exactly. So I'm going to go with – and, yes, I'm going to go with – I'm going to go with Bridgewater. Although, one could argue that Bridgewater is – potentially in a tougher division. With Green Bay,
he is in a
Detroit, even though
Detroit's going to look good.
Sue is with Miami.
They're not it, though. They're not it, though.
Oh, yeah.
They're not it. They're in a tougher division.
They're in a tougher division than the Eagles are. So the Eagles, who look good up until they, you know, show who they really were at the end of the last season.
Yeah.
How do we judge it? If, let's say, Bridgewater has a great season, but his team doesn't because they're in a tough division.
I don't care about that.
Okay. Well, I'm going with Bridgewater.
Yeah, I don't care. Like, quarterbacks can't deem what your team's going to be as a whole. I mean, you put up numbers.
Bridgewater.
All right, so I want to pick Bridgewater. Yeah, I know, right? Go ahead with the tree talk. I want to choose Bridgewater because I like Bridgewater. I actually like him a lot. I think Adrian Peterson's going to make him look so much better. He's a good quarterback, but Adrian Peterson's going to look better, make him look better. And I'm honest, like, coming into the season, last season, I didn't think Bridgewater would be that impactful.
I know.
Right? But when I watched him play, not even because he played against the Redskins, just to see what he did with the whole Adrian Peterson drama and the level he played. And again, to me, the wide receiving core in Minnesota wasn't that good, and he still did well. And won some games people thought he wasn't going to win. I gained so much respect for him. So Bridgewater with Adrian Peterson, with Mike Wallace. I'm going to say it again. The drafting of Stephon Diggs was big. Stephon Diggs looks good in preseason. I heard great reports of him in camp, about him in camp. You have him another playmaker. You still have the kid Patterson, who's a playmaker, just as a return man, not as a receiver. So you have weapons for Teddy Bridgewater. But I'm still going with Sam Bradford only because of the offense he's in with the Eagles. It fits his skill set. A guy he can get the ball out. He gets the ball out quick. He's a guy who spreads the ball around. And with Chip Kelly's quick pace offense, it fits what Sam Bradford likes to do. So I like the offense and the way it's tailored to Sam Bradford, and he is a more accurate quarterback compared to Nick Foles. So and he's actually more mobile than Nick Foles, even with the leg and even with the knee surgeries. So I like Sam Bradford, what he wants to do, just because of the setup of the offense. I agree with you, Ray. I'm not that impressed with the Eagles wide receiving core with Matthews. Either Matthews would be the number one, and Aguilar from USC, the rookie, who did have a big play today, had a 57-yard reception for a touchdown. Not 57, maybe a 47 or 37. Sorry, I'm sure I'm exaggerating, but he had a big play for a touchdown against the Colts in the preseason game. So I'm gonna go with Sam Bradford, but I think they're both gonna have great years, though. I really believe they both are gonna have some great years.
We'll see. We'll see. I was thinking that if Mark Sanchez can succeed, what is Sam Bradford going to do?
That's a good point.
Losing Jeremy Maclin.
What's big? It's huge. It's huge. It's definitely huge. All right, Phillip Rivers, you got a 4-year extension worth $83.25 million and $65 million guaranteed. Is he an elite quarterback?
Phillip Rivers?
Yeah,
absolutely.
You believe he's an elite quarterback? I think so too.
Yeah.
Folks, you surprised people don't think that. I think Phillip Rivers is an elite quarterback. This team should be better with him. Well, it should be better because they have Melvin Gordon as the running back. They had that running back situation, even though Danny Woodhead played well, but he's a guy that you want to use on third down. No, you know what I mean, they value Danny Woodhead like he's something special, but he's a third down back. What you want to say though about Danny Woodhead? Okay, about to say they value him like no other. But you have having Gordon on that team, I think will make it easy for Phillip Rivers. I would have liked them to get another wide receiver in the draft, give Phillip Rivers more wet weapons. But I guess they're fine with is his name Matthews too, 13. So he had a good year with him too. Dustin and Malcolm Floyd. They have another one too. You know what I'm talking about? It's number 13. I think it's Matthews too. He's good though. I know that because he's the one who talked trash about Richard Sherman, said he wasn't all that after he kind of used him. You know what I'm talking about? You still know what I'm talking about? Dang, man, you no help today, man. Usually you have like a good memory. Like, yeah, I know that dude. You're like, nah, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. Yeah. So anyway, they're deep enough at wide receiver. Well, not deep enough, but they have two. And Malcolm Floyd is always hurt. So I would like to be more deep at wide receiver for Phillip Rivers. But he should have a good season. He should have a bounce back season. The team should contend for a postseason spot. And Phillip Rivers is definitely the quarterback to do so. He needs to limit his interceptions, but I think Phillip Rivers is elite. I'm just waiting for him to get to that Super Bowl. Because now, you know, since the LT left and some of the faces they had on that defense side of the ball, they haven't been as dominant as a team collectively, defensively and offensively. They've always had the offensive part because of Phillip Rivers. But hopefully they can have they can have that success as a team total as a team offensively and defensively. Real quick before we end the show soon, thinking of a player who just got an extension. T.Y. Hilton, we're talking about the coach. T.Y. Hilton had a deal worth $65 million. Is he an elite wide receiver?
Not yet. He could be. I heard the main reason that he was given that deal is because they want to build a strong core nucleus to continue to build for the future.
So he got that deal because of just they might.
Yeah, I mean they don't want to lose their player. They want to show the fan base they're committed to winning and having sustained success with a core group of guys. And him and Tennis is warm me
Luck?
Up. Luck, Andrew Luck. I was going to call him Sam Bradford. Him and Andrew Luck, apparently, I don't know the statistic, but they've hooked up more, I think, more than any other wide receiver pair, quarterback wide receiver pair for touchdowns or something like that. I think it's huge. We'll see. Once you get the money, you know, now you got to show that you're worth it. And J.J. Watt set the standard last year saying, I have everything to prove now.
Yeah,
I've gotten paid. So let's see how he responds. other people have not always responded to the big payday as well, unfortunately.
Never. A lot of people don't.
Like Albert.
Yeah, Albert. There's a lot of people don't produce after getting paid. A lot of people. He's not one. He's not the only one. There's a lot of folks who, when they get their money, they don't produce. And Albert's just one of them. Real quick, about Philip Rivers, my man, on our Facebook page, my man George said about Philip Rivers being a lead. He said not right now, but like Mike McCoy is so good with quarterbacks, he can yet get there. Hard to be a lead with no Super Bowl appearances. Do you agree with that? About not, you can't be
no
a lead.
Super Bowl appearances.
If you have a Super Bowl, you can't be a lead. Is that true?
I'm sitting up here trying to think of someone who maybe was considered a lead. I mean, Marino comes to mind, but
he went to Super Bowl.
That doesn't count. Randall Cunningham didn't go to Super Bowl. He was a lead quarterback.
I thought he was a lead too. At the time.
Yeah, that's a whole other
argument. Yeah.
I'm sure people would probably disagree.
I agree with that too.
I don't know. How do you define a lead quarterback? I guess is what it comes
Andrew
down
Luck's
to.
Elite. I know it's short though. He's elite. He hasn't been to a Super Bowl.
He has a much shorter tenure than Rivers.
So,
I guess that's the big difference.
Okay.
Again, it's something that's hard to define.
Is Matt Ryan elite?
I think he's on the verge. I don't think he is yet.
Okay.
I just don't. Tony Gonzalez said that. He said he could be Peyton Manning, but he just hasn't got there yet. He said, I see Peyton Manning and Brady and Matt Ryan, and he hasn't got there yet. Phillip Rivers, I think he's fell victim to injury, to bad coaching. I mean,
which I'm a Manor.
Yeah, they had opportunities to go to school. They had a strong defense.
Yeah, so
for
yeah,
a while.
They did. They just,
I mean,
the 14-2 team,
had,
yeah.
And he had a great receiving core, one of the best tight ends ever.
Yeah.
LaDainian, one of the best running backs. There's no reason they should not have reached the Super Bowl.
That's true.
And it doesn't fall on his shoulders. That's why I think he's elite. I think he's been put in some tough spots. And for a long time, A.J. Smith, there was a disconnect between coaching and front office.
Of course.
And that's the main problem.
Anyway, we're about to shut down the show. It's been great. Just want to say thank you all for supporting us. We appreciate it. This show is done better than I could even expected. I got my boy Ray Jeezy back. You know what I mean? It's a rarity. We had to do a show on Sunday. Missed y'all on Tuesday. So I still expect to try to have a show upcoming Tuesday. We'll see if that pans out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I wanted to make sure you had to hear our voices on the airways anyway. But Ray, anything you want to say to the people?
I want my tree to grow. That's the main thing. I'm focusing on watering my tree. From now on, I'm building it.
Yeah, build it, man.
Whether it's fitness, business, urban sports scene, I got to have a bigger tree.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
In order to be an elite individual, I need to have a tree.
That's a new saying. Hashtag tree. We hashtagging tree?
It's I am the USS.
I am the USS. I am the USS. Make sure you listen to our show on our archives, our show and then our shows, which are our archive, excuse me, by visiting the site, which is www.walio.podbean.com. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Thing. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. Again, it's a blessing to talk sports with you all. You all take care. We out. Deuces. Mega. Lead these folks out for me, homie. Swag, pledge allegiance to the swag.